he noticed a huge tibia, maybe a meter long, black dinosaur bone on the beach. So he went up the cliff, and quite high up in the cliff, he found another bone sticking out.
Job titles don't get much better than Namer of Dinosaurs. And in order to name a dinosaur, you need to have discovered a new one. We're off to the Isle of Wight, the most prolific place for dinosaurs in Europe, to the scene of a once-in-a-lifetime find. I'm Rosie Holsworth, a ranger at the National Trust. Welcome to Wild Tales and the story of the dinosaur in the cliff. I'm in Compton Bay on the Isle of Wight. It's an absolutely beautiful morning, bright and breezy and early. The skylarks are singing. I'm looking out over the calm waters of the bay. And I am here to find out a little bit more about dinosaurs, which I'm very excited about. And I need an expert. And fortunately, I've come to meet just one of those. He is Jeremy Lockwood, and he is a namer of dinosaurs. He's a doctor of paleontology, and I'm hoping I'm going to bump into him just around the corner here. Good morning.
Good morning.
You must be Jeremy.
I am indeed, yes.
Pleased to meet you.
Pleased to meet you.
My companion for the day, Dr. Jeremy Lockwood, is going to take me down to the beach where his friend Nick made an incredible find in 2013. Nick, a dab hand at finding dinosaurs, found a metre-long bone on the beach, scrambled up the cliff directly above, and found another bone. Realising he had a potentially good amount of dinosaur on his hands, he called him back up to excavate, and Jeremy was among the team. Little did they know at this stage what it was that they'd discovered. In fact, it would be several years before the significance of that day's find on this spectacular beach would reveal itself. And we're off today back to the exact same spot where the dinosaur that will become known as Comptonatus chasei was found.
So looking out along this enormous stretch of sand, how far along are we going to go?
Not very far. Where that little bit is jutting out, a few hundred metres away, is where we're going to go. That was where Comptonatus... This dinosaur was found, so we should be able to actually see the exact spot.
Brilliant.
Finding dinosaur bones on the Isle of Wight isn't particularly unusual. In the summers especially, the beaches here are filled with fossil hunters. It's one of the best places in Europe for finds. But the discovery I'm here to find out more about was a once-in-a-lifetime, and wasn't just luck. The man who found it, Jeremy's longtime friend Nick, had spent hours walking along this beach in particular, scouring for finds for pretty much his entire adult life. Things he found were passed on to the Dinosaur Isle Museum on the Isle of Wight for safekeeping. But the 2013 find was to be hugely significant. Not only would it turn out to be one of the best preserved dinosaurs ever to be found in the UK, it was also a new species, a new member of the Iguanodon family, cementing the Isle of Wight as one of the best places to study dinosaurs. There's a bit of a walk to get to the cliffs in question, so as we head off along the beach, I asked Jeremy to explain exactly what it is about the area that means dinosaur bones are so often found here.
What is it particularly about Compton Bay that makes it so good for dinosaur bones?
Probably a lot of the southeast of England has these dinosaur beds in them, but they're all under the ground.
Yeah.
And the days have gone when people dug little quarries for every village. So these beds are exposed to the Atlantic. And you know, as we can see, this is eroding this away really rapidly.
The sea and the power of the waves are doing the job of the old quarry workers, constantly nibbling away at the land, revealing new rocks, new patches of earth. But it's not just its position right by the coast that's significant. For the other part of the jigsaw, you've got to go back more than 120 million years.
The other thing is this was a river floodplain, which is a particularly good place to find fossils because things are rapidly buried. And we get times where we had huge floods here. The Cretaceous was very hot. There'd been a lot of volcanic activity and sea levels were rising. So we get torrential downpours. And these are thought to bring up sheet floods, which would come down from the hills, which were probably to the north, and just sweep everything up. It would just bury things very rapidly with no oxygen. We find these beds called plant debris beds, and they're the ones that we find 90% of the bones in. And it just preserves them in absolute beautiful condition. That's why the Isle of Wight is so perfect for dinosaur bones.
So it's bad news for the dinosaurs, but good news for dinosaur hunters.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm sure a lot of them managed to get away from the flash floods. We do find some fossils, which is just the legs stuck in the ground. So they probably got stuck sometimes. So there could have been some bad endings, yes.
With everything I've discovered so far, as we continue to walk along to the spot, it's fair to say I'm feeling quite hopeful that I might find something myself. I know it's unlikely, but you never know, and I have an excellent guide by my side. As we cover the last bit of beach, I ask Jeremy how far back his love of dinosaurs stretches.
So I'm getting on a bit now. When I was a small boy, I was really interested in fossils. I had a friend at school right from the age of five, and it was a strange thing because no one else in the school was at all interested in dinosaurs.
Really?
You know, this was a long way before Jurassic Park.
Right,
and
yeah, yeah.
Like this. But we always dreamed of dinosaurs.
His childhood interest then stretched into adulthood. Family holidays were taken on the Isle of Wight, and his passion was reignited.
When my children were younger, maybe about 30 years ago, we started coming down here and walking along, and I heard there were dinosaur fossils here. So I started looking and started finding dinosaur bones, and it just rekindled all that interest.
All the excitement,
and,
yeah.
The excitement of it.
The holidays were a break from Jeremy's demanding job as a doctor, a job that would go on to eventually help him in dinosaur identification.
So I was a general practitioner in the Midlands. I did that for 30 years. Before that, I'd been a junior doctor for quite a long time. I quite enjoyed working in accidents and emergencies. The problem with medicine is once you've retired, you can't use your knowledge. You can't carry on teaching, and I enjoyed teaching. So I thought, I'll do a PhD on the dinosaurs. So I went to Portsmouth University and spent 5 years doing a PhD.
Amazing. So with a medical training and a history as a GP, did that help you at all in kind of determining the different species and the different types of bones you were finding?
I did a little bit of surgery before general practice. So as a medical student, I learnt a lot of anatomy. Dinosaur anatomies and human anatomies are really very different.
Yeah.
But they've got the same sort of names and, you know,
yeah.
A lot of the parts are the same. So, yes, that was quite helpful.
And with that, we're at the spot.
Have a scramble about.
Before Jeremy tells me about the day of the find, we scramble up the cliff to see if we can find anything today. My heart's racing. I'm half thinking I'm going to find something. I'm definitely going to find something. And then equally thinking there's absolutely no way I'll find anything. But we're searching in April, and the winter storms have been having a good go at the cliff. Even seasoned, all-weather, lifelong beachgoer fossil hunter Jeremy is shocked by how much. You can hear it in his voice.
This is absolutely phenomenal. This debris bed has been taken back more than in years.
I can't imagine how on earth you would ever spot anything in here, because it's you're having to concentrate so hard on not falling over or tumbling down onto the beach, that keeping an eye out for tiny fragments of bone is quite the skill. And it really is a jumble of all sorts of different colours of mud and all that organic material. How on earth you start to look for things, I really don't know.
And then, something to show me. But what's he seen?
Okay. When these floods occurred, a lot of the stuff that came down with the bones, most of it was plant debris. And because it was buried so rapidly, it didn't deteriorate. And we get sort of black
I was going to say, is that this black? Is that because it's organic matter?
Yes, if we look down in here, exactly.
Oh, wow, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
So there you can see there. Yeah. So that's a 125-million-year-old piece of wood. And sometimes we get charcoal, so there must have been a lot of forest fires going on at some point or another. Yes, it's slumped down, but
yeah,
everything has just collapsed in the last few weeks here.
Then Jeremy finds something else.
So we have an oyster here. So that's from the sea. So that's probably from higher up and has washed down. So that's about 120 million-year-old oyster.
And after a bit more scrambling, we're in a much better spot to see where Comptonatus chasei was dug out.
You can see the main part of the cliff there, not the very top bit, but the main cliff is a sort of pinky brown colour.
Yeah.
And that's very typical of soil, but we've got that grey layer underneath it. And that's the layer that held the Comptonatus.
Right.
And in fact, this bit here is some of the stuff we dug out.
Oh, wow, okay.
So just as we go around the corner up there, that's where we had to dig, which wasn't too bad because we're not too far from the top of the cliff.
And Nick, Jeremy and the rest of the crew made plenty of trips to the top of the cliff as they kept finding more and more bones. The find was, for Nick especially, the culmination of a lifelong passion.
Nick Chase spent his whole life almost, since his 20s, well into his 60s, collecting dinosaurs here every day he came down and collected and formed a phenomenal collection which he gave to the museum.
And then, that day in 2013, a huge bone was waiting for him.
He was walking along here. He noticed a huge tibia, maybe a metre long, black dinosaur bone on the beach. So he went up the cliff, and quite high up in the cliff, he found another bone sticking out. So he alerted the museum. Luckily, I was around at that time, so we all came down and started digging away.
Then there's several stages of excavation to go through.
So the first thing to do is we remove the overburden. So pickaxes and spades and move all the top away. And then pickaxes and shovels are thrown away and trowels and knives and smaller instruments are taken out. And when you start finding bones, then you would put something on top of it like foil. And then we would run down to the beach and get a bucket of water, Hessian, and put that into plaster of Paris and start to cover the top of it. And then we dig underneath it, and then we can hopefully flip this thing over onto the hardened plaster, put more covering on the other side and put more plaster of Paris. Sometimes it's four of us. We put it in a blanket or something like that, you know, and try and struggle up to the top of the cliff and get to the path and get it down.
What the team found and excavated in 2013 was officially handed over to the museum, the Dinosaur Isle Museum in Sandown, the other side of the island to where we are now. It then took them 2 years to clean all the bones. There were a lot of them. In fact, Nick and the team were to go on to discover that their dinosaur was the most complete skeleton found in the UK in 100 years. There were bits missing, including the top of a tibia. But incredibly, 4 years after Nick's original find, Jeremy made his own remarkable discovery.
I was walking along here and found a top of a tibia.
No way!
And it slotted perfectly
in there. That must have felt amazing, being able to...
Oh, it was a nice feeling.
That moment of putting the two together.
I showed it to Nick and he said, I'm sure that's exactly the right bit that's missing from there. And indeed, it did just slot together absolutely perfectly.
It was another bit of their iguanodon. But at this stage, Jeremy and the team don't realise they've just dug up a new species, still to be named by Jeremy as Comptonatus chasei, a new member of the iguanodon family.
On the island, nearly all the fossils of dinosaurs you find are from Iguanodontians. They were very much the dominant group of dinosaurs on the island. Some people call them the cattle of the Cretaceous because they probably went around in herds because we find lots of footprints of these. We've got a lot on them on the island. And it would seem sensible that for a big animal, I mean, Comptonatus is probably about the size of the American bison.
Right, wow.
And where you find cattle and bison and things like that, they tend to be in herds because it's a good way of protecting themselves and their young from predators. One of the markers on them, certainly on more of the later ones, and certainly on Comptonatus, is the thumb spikes.
Ah,
so these,
yes.
So these were these dinosaurs that had thumb spikes.
Yeah.
Heavy animals. So if you were wanting to attack or an iguanodontian that was in a herd, you had to be very careful because, you know, you could have a whole ton of something charging at you and maybe several of them at once. So yeah. It could have been quite a dangerous game.
Finding the most complete dinosaur in 100 years is a pretty good thing to put on your CV. But that's not the end of the story for this dinosaur, because COVID is about to hit. And while the country goes into lockdown, Jeremy goes into self-inflicted solitary confinement at the museum, head down, poring over countless dinosaur bones. But how long does it take to discover you've just dug up the bones of a whole new species of dinosaur?
Well, there are people out there probably who could have done it very much more quickly than me. But it took me the best part of 5 years to develop the knowledge. So I started going through iguanodontian bones in the collection in the museum, but through other museums, through the whole of the Natural History Museum, which is looking at thousands of bones, photographing them, measuring them, describing them. So it took me quite a long time to get to the point where I had that confidence to say, this is different. You know, I've seen enough of these animals now to know that these are different features on it. And that allowed me then to discussed with my supervisors this, and everyone agreed that this was a new animal.
It was an incredible discovery, amazing, once in a lifetime. But for the man behind it all, it was
something to do during COVID, because a lot of it's reading, just reading papers, and it's comparing it to all the other dinosaurs in the world, the iguanodontians in the world. So you need a thorough knowledge of that. So yes, I think my wife had felt that we were coming to retire on the Isle of Wight, and as we got here we suddenly found that we're in the midst of an epidemic. I was totally obsessed with dinosaurs.
So this might be a slightly cheeky question, but it sounds like it's a very long and drawn out process with a lot of kind of staring at probably fairly dry scientific papers and some very minute bits of bone. Did you not get a little bit bored?
No, not at all. It just kept me awake at night. That was a problem, because if you're trying to find define a new species or look at things, it just, you have to be totally obsessed by it, you know. It just takes over your life, really, because it's a bit like a detective, I felt.
Mm.
You're looking for clues and things like that, and you sort of wake up in the middle of the night and say, oh, that was a bit different. And so I found that really exciting. I'm not sure the people around me found it quite so exciting. I know my wife, you know, you get swear boxes.
Yeah.
And my wife made a box which was talking to people about dinosaurs and they didn't ask you to.
Unsolicited dinosaur comments. Yeah. And has she forgiven you after you?
I think so. Yes. I mean, I could have spent 5 years and said, no, everyone was right all along and there's no new species here, you know, which would have been a good scientific result, but not quite as fun as actually saying, you know, here's a new dinosaur and that. Yeah, I was just very lucky.
But it wasn't just luck behind Jeremy's COVID discovery. That GP background, the early career specialising in anatomy, and then the PhD.
So I chose for my PhD to do taxonomy, which is really just looking at hundreds and hundreds of bones to get a really good feel of what the variation was in them. And that's when I suddenly started to find that one had a bulbous nose. You know, well, none of the others have got a bulbous nose, so this looks pretty obvious that this is a different animal, and it had quite numerous other differences as well when we look closely.
Jeremy's COVID work was, in his own words, scrutinised by peers and the Natural History Museum, before he was then able to declare that he had indeed identified a new species. There was still the fun bit of naming it. But as we headed back along the beach, and not forgetting I was on my own side hustle to find a bit of 120 million year old natural history, we have one last scramble about. And at the base of the steps back to the car park, Jeremy spots a clue high in the cliffs.
Is it that very shallow layer?
So we've got our early Cretaceous dinosaur beds ending, and on top of it there's this gravel. And then above the gravel, can you see there's a sort of darkish layer before we get to more modern soil? And it was part of a woodland.
Which leads us to look down at our feet.
And we do find nuts, hazelnuts.
Amazing.
And they used to be known in early Georgian times, or even earlier, I think, as Noah's nuts, because people believed that this must have been the Great Flood, which you can perfectly understand.
Definitely,
you know, there's this layer of woodland below this. So there's been a bit of a collapse of it. And if you look in there,
I was going to say,
I'll let you be the first to find one.
Is that a nut? It's a nut! It's
yes,
a hazelnut!
Yes, be very careful with them.
Wow!
I think there's quite a few of them,
so
though.
Cool. So look!
But be gentle with them. They do dry out.
Oh, they're really cool.
There we go.
Yeah.
And, I mean, sometimes we find little gnawings in them where...
A little ancient mouse.
An ancient mouse or something has had a nibble.
Oh. Well, we didn't find dinosaur bones, but we did find Noah's nuts.
Noah's nuts.
That makes me very happy.
With my Noah's nuts gently in my hand and the beach rapidly disappearing behind us, there's just one more thing to ask Jeremy. How do you come up with a name for a new species of dinosaur?
Well, it's one of the nice bits of discovering a new species.
Comptonatus chasei is the name Jeremy chose. And as we look back down on Compton Bay, he talks me through the Comptonatus bit first.
I wanted to reflect that it was found on the Isle of Wight. So I thought Compton sounded a good place to start. So I had to put something, I couldn't just call it Compton. It has to have a sort of Latin ending. So I was thinking of words that might fit with that. And there's that tonere or tonatus in Latin means thundered. And I imagine from all the footprints we're seeing that this animal, Comptonatus, probably was in a herd. And if it was spooked or something like that, it probably did thunder through the river plains of the early Cretaceous. And then chasei means really chases Compton Thunderer.
But there was another reason to go with chasei. Jeremy's friend Nick. Nick Chase.
Nick spent his whole life in pretty much with very, very little money. He qualified at the university in a biological sciences degree and then just spent the rest of his life going to Compton once or twice a day and collecting everything and not keeping it himself, but actually putting it into the museum. I think if someone's found something, it's nice to name that dinosaur after them, really.
Nick died of cancer in 2019, just before COVID swept across the world and Jeremy got his head down at the museum.
He was a phenomenal man. I mean, he had a son, Will, and his sister, Sarah. They were so proud of the fact that he was such a good collector of dinosaurs, and he was tremendously knowledgeable about them. He did get the Mary Anning Award from the Paleontological Association, which is the highest award you could get as an amateur. But I think it was really the icing on the cake to actually have a dinosaur named after a man who'd contributed so much to dinosaur research. Yeah, I think they were very delighted and proud of him for it.
That's lovely, yeah. It's been a really, really wonderful day. So thank you so much for taking the time and showing us around.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Wild Tales with me, Rosie Holdsworth. Why not check out the episode show notes, and I'll leave a link to the beach we went to, where we parked, and where you can see Nick and Jeremy's dinosaur. And you can find us on Instagram, @WildTalesNT. See you next time.